Well, hello, and welcome to this very special episode of Untangling Toys, the podcast about all things toys and play. I'm Sam Sixeri, and I bet if you're watching this, you're wondering what I'm doing here. Or if you're listening, you're probably not wondering what I'm doing here because you don't know where I am. We're here at the Santa Ana Zoo, and we're trying to find out, do animals play? And there's a lot of animals here, so we're going to find out if animals play. Last week's episode, we talked about how humans play. Let's see what animals do when they play. Excuse me? Are you playing right now? Is this fun for you? Let's go interview somebody else.
Turtles, do you like to play? Do you like to race rabbits?
Maybe camels like to play. Hello? Excuse me, camels, do you like to play? Blue and yellow macaws, do you guys like to play? Oh, we got a response. Except I don't speak macaw. Oh boy, it's hard to do interviews. All right, we found some crested capuchin monkeys. One of them is named Mateo. Apparently he's sort of the one to ask around here. Excuse me, Mateo, crested capuchin monkeys, do you like to play?
Mr. Mountain Lion, do you like to play?
Talking to animals doesn't seem to be working, so maybe I'll talk to a person. In fact, that's what we're going to be doing on today's episode of Untangling Toys. We're going to be talking to a person who can actually tell us about do animals like to play. My guest on today's episode is Danny Steinberg, who is a primatologist who actually used to work right here at the Santa Ana Zoo studying all these primates. And we're going to ask Danny, do animals play? And if animals do play, what does play look like for animals? And why is it important to animals? And if you want to learn more about toys and play, you can check out all the other episodes of the Untangling Toys podcast, wherever you listen to or watch podcasts. And then you can also follow us on all of our socials at Untangling Toys Podcast. If you have any comments or questions, that's a good place to leave a little comment. Or if you want to contact us directly, you can reach out to us at untanglingtoys@gmail.com. Hang around and we'll be right back after this break. Hear from Danny about primates and play. Hello, and welcome back to the Untangling Toys podcast. This is a very special episode because I have two guests. I have Danny Steinberg and Agnes. And Agnes is a dog?
That's what they tell us.
Agnes is a French...
Frenchie. French bulldog.
French
yes.
Bulldog. Okay,
yep.
I wasn't... Yeah. It's
like yep. Don't get one.
No. Agnes has brachiary problems.
She is a brachycephalic.
Brachycephalic.
That means flat-faced, essentially.
Oh.
Yeah, so all kinds of breathing issues, amongst other things.
But still so cute.
Oh! Did you taste that?
Danny Steinberg, you are a primatologist.
I am a primatologist.
And what is a primatologist?
Great question. So that means I study monkeys and apes and lemurs.
Ooh.
Those are all different kinds of primates.
Monkeys, apes, lemurs.
Mm-hmm. And humans are also primates.
Real quickly, what is the difference between monkeys and apes?
Ooh, really good question. Glad you asked. I wish everyone knew this. Monkeys tend to be smaller. There are many characteristics where monkeys differ from apes, but some of the easiest ones to spot are monkeys are smaller, they have tails, they're not necessarily as neurologically evolved, which is a really nice way of saying apes are smarter, usually. And humans could be considered apes. We're great apes.
We don't have tails.
We do not have tails, but we are primates.
Yeah.
And we're closely related to all those guys.
Nice. And, well, that's really what I wanted to talk to you about, because you not only study primates, you specifically study play in primates.
Yeah.
You have traveled across the world, across the planet, to study primates in the wild. Where did you study them?
So I've been lucky enough to have the opportunity to go to Costa Rica and studied primates there for a month. And then I also went to, my favorite field work was Rwanda, where I studied over 10 species of primates there. So that was really, really cool and where I did more of the play behavior. I studied play in relation to predation, so how the threat of a predator affected how the monkeys played.
You got really close up to some very silly gorillas at one point.
Yes, yeah. So gorillas are not monkeys, those are apes.
No tails.
They were my favorite, absolute favorite to study in Rwanda.
Your shirt is not a, your shirt is a gorilla.
It is a gorilla.
Yeah.
It says I was told there would be gorillas. It's the only reason I show up anywhere.
Well, I did promise you gorillas.
I was told.
I'm sorry. It was a trick to get you here.
It worked. Gorillas like to let us know that they are big, macho, and in charge, and that they could mess us up real quick. One way they do that is by displaying, and they'll do that both for humans and for other gorillas as a way of saying, like, hey, look at me. I'm big, macho. And so when we were studying gorillas one day in Rwanda in the volcanoes,
Volcanoes.
Oh yeah, they live on volcanoes.
Are these volcano gorillas?
These are volcano gorillas.
They're just covered in magma and they.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're just lava gorillas. They're mountain gorillas.
Okay.
And these mountains are volcanoes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Volcano gorilla. Yeah. Sorry, I'm still gonna think volcano gorilla.
Yeah, they should be called that.
Yeah.
They really missed an opportunity there. She is burning alive. No.
Oh, okay. We will de-hot dog.
De-hot the dog. Oh my goodness. I'm sorry. She loves the heat. But that's the breathing. Okay. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
So, one day we're studying gorillas up in Volcanoes National Park in Rwanda.
Uh-huh.
So literally on the side of a volcano. And we watched as a blackback, who's just a younger male, he's not fully mature, he's not in charge of the group, he did this display where he beat his chest, so kind of like what you would see on TV with gorillas.
Yeah.
Common misconception is they beat their chest with a closed fist.
Yeah, Tarzan style.
Right? No. Nah. In reality, you want to have a cupped palm because that's what creates that loud sound.
Oh,
I probably really... Oh,
well.
Sorry.
Hang on. I'll take my mic off. All right, so.
Yeah. Ooh, and that hurts probably more.
This does hurt more.
That's a little more destructive.
Oh, yeah, that is louder.
Louder, yeah. So anyway.
Yeah.
A blackback.
So, but a juvenile was doing this show off, even though he's not supposed to.
Yeah. So this group is made up of a silverback, who's the main guy in charge. He is head honcho, big man. And then there's two younger males and a few females as well, and then their offspring. So it's a nice big family group. The silverback is in charge. He went ahead and wanted to let the humans and all the other gorillas in the group know that that was not okay and that he is actually big man on campus. So after the little guy's display, the big guy went running over towards him, pushed him over, not enough to hurt him, but enough to, like, shake him up.
Right.
Say, hey, watch out. Pushed him over, grabbed a vine from one of the nearby trees while running bipedally. So on two legs, he was running, which doesn't happen too often. Grabbed a vine and then Hulk smashed the ground a few feet from where I was standing, which was terrifying.
Right.
But so exciting.
Nothing between you two, because you're out in the wild.
This is in the wild. There's not a fence in sight.
How big is the silver? Because he's the older one, so...
Especially up on 2 feet, like...
300 something pounds, probably. I don't know if this is my imagination, but I thought I felt the ground shake when he punched right by my foot. I was terrified, but, you know, just try to be as calm as possible.
Yeah.
And then he proceeded to pose and do a big stance of... to show his authority, his macho-ness, and make himself look as big as possible. So he flexed, puffed out his lips, made himself look really big, really macho after that really big display. And then he lets out the squeakiest high-pitched little fart I have ever heard. And I just about fell over laughing.
That is really up close with animals.
Yeah, try not to get too close. We want to keep on average like 10 feet distance just for our safety, our health, their health.
But you specifically studied baboons and vermin. I kept saying that wrong.
Vermin?
No.
Vervets.
Vervets. Vervets.
You studied play. Vervets are a kind of monkey. I'll put up a picture of vervets and baboons.
Specifically all of baboons. I was studying play in vervet monkeys and baboons. I was looking at play in all of the different species, mm-hmm. But because I had the most time observing the baboons and the vervets and got the most data with them.
So when you're studying these baboons and vervets up close, how do you actually know that they are playing versus maybe looking for food or...
Good question. Yeah. So play can be defined in so many different ways, but mm-hmm. the important thing is that we need to be able to define it in objective language. So something that you can say and that someone who has never met you before could understand. Play can be defined, so one scientist defines it using three components of play necessitating.
Oh, we can say the name of the scientist. We should credit him.
Burghardt. Yeah. So Burghardt defines play as something that arises spontaneously, so mm-hmm. it just kind of happens. There's not a rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
It doesn't have an immediate function. Mm-hmm. So behaviors like eating and drinking, it's an immediate function to satiate your hunger, to fulfill your thirst. Play is not actually doing anything for your survival right away.
Yeah.
But it is important still. So the third condition for play to occur is for there to be a stable environment. So what that means is that you're not at risk of dying.
Yeah.
All your basic hierarchy needs are met. So you've got food, you're safe, things are chill. Yeah. We're all right.
Actually, can you hand me that book right behind you, Play? Stuart Brown has seven properties of play, and you know these three here, they line up a lot. Apparently purposeless,
without function, having no function.
Voluntary,
arising spontaneously.
Yeah. Inherent attraction, and that's like, yeah, you know, you won't play, you won't do something for play that you don't find interesting,
even if somebody else does.
Sure.
Freedom from time, this one's a little subjective, but it's just like, yeah, it's sort of the opposite of boredom.
Yeah.
Diminished consciousness of self.
Mm-hmm. You're focused on something else, sure. Yeah.
Improvisational potential.
Sure.
And continuation desire. So that's interesting, that how those overlap there.
Yeah.
Play in people and play in animals in the wild.
Yeah, I mean, it's all play.
One of the big questions, do all animals play?
It's a wonderful question. I think the answer is yes, from what I know. Mm-hmm. I specifically do study primates, so I want to... mammals.
How is play crucial for primate development?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's helpful in so many different ways, which is why it happens. So saying it has no immediate function, as part of the definition, is true.
Yeah.
But it still has a function. This function just happens later on.
Right.
The benefit of play arises later.
Because you mostly noticed the majority of the baboons and the vervets that played the most were juveniles.
Yeah.
So not infants who are still too young to know how to move.
Still learning how to use their body.
Why is that? Why primarily primates?
Ooh. It's a way to practice being an adult, essentially. For the same reason humans play, evolutionarily speaking, and the same reason why, you know, your puppy might play, why a kitten plays.
Yeah.
All sorts of animals play because it's practice for when they're adults.
Yeah.
And again, evolutionarily, everyone's goal is to survive, to reproduce, to pass on that genetic material. And so everything we do naturally is towards that goal. So play actually is helpful in survival and reproduction in the sense that it gives you skills, or it gives an animal skills that they'll need later in life, both motor skills, so like being able to use a body. So jumping around and being able to climb things and land on things and not fall out of a tree.
What kind of play did you notice in the animals? Like, what did it look like? Would they pick up trying to think of something out in the wild. Obviously, they didn't play with toys.
No, so the monkeys didn't have Legos or train sets or anything like that. But they still had fun.
Okay.
One of the populations that I looked at actually lived in a trash heap. It was a human dump, and the baboons would find plenty of food in it, which is not always the best. But they would also find all kinds of objects that they could use for play.
Okay.
In addition to using other objects, sometimes they would play with each other, just physically, like wrestling or chasing. I watched one young monkey grab kind of like a hanging branch, it had some like give to it. It would turn, and then lift its feet and just...
Like a, like a theme park.
Yeah, or the little kids who love to spin. Yes. Yeah.
Spinning.
Yeah, spinning.
People like spinning, huh?
Yeah. And I mean, that's great for your balance and...
Okay.
But then also, maybe even more so important with primates like you and me, very social species, it's important for social development and understanding how to act. So things like cooperation, collaboration, compromise, the very important C's of play.
Collaboration,
cooperation, and compromising are things that can be learned when playing with others that are really important for future adult life, whether it be human adults or vervet adults.
Yeah.
If you want to make friends and have a seat at the table, if you will, you're going to want to know how to interact with your, with the people around you.
And these aren't instinctual. They have to be learned. Like when a baby horse is born, it knows how to gallop by instinct. So these social skills are not instinct. They do have to be learned.
So
they learn them through play.
There's a part of it is instinctual. Mm-hmm. Just because we are social species, we need it for survival. We're naturally drawn to social situations. Mm-hmm. But in order to navigate them successfully, we need to practice.
So we instinctually want to socialize, but actually being able to do it well.
Being good at it.
Yeah.
Takes practice.
Yeah, and obviously if you do it, you know, if you haven't had practice in it and you go into it, you're not going to be accepted into the group so readily, and then you'll feel bad because you don't get to play with all the others.
So in addition to feeling bad, it's really important to be part of a group or be accepted into a group for survival and for reproduction.
Yeah.
A lot of things are collaborative in groups, so getting food, a lot of it is shared. And so the higher ranking individuals, those who interact much nicer, are going to be given a share, whereas those who don't know how to navigate these social situations as well, make others feel uncomfortable or something, are less likely to get what they need.
That's sort of the long-term benefits of play.
Yeah.
So short-term, you learn things like, okay, you learn how to use your body, and so if a predator shows up, you can run faster, you can climb fast, you've practiced that. Long-term, you can socialize well, so you'll stay with the group, and you'll stay, you won't be on your own.
Yeah, the primary purpose of play, the function of it, happens much later, so the benefit that you're reaping from play, you don't get until much later on. However, play is still fun. We still do play, and it still feels good, right? Because it's releasing dopamine. It's still doing immediate good. And that's our body's natural way of reinforcing this behavior that is so beneficial to us in the long term.
Our body knows play is important. Our bodies know that play is so important that we'll risk. There's a risk involved to it that we'll accept, right?
I talked to a 10-year-old today who told me about how she was playing on the monkey bars and broke her arm.
Yeah.
It's a risk.
Yeah.
And same with primates, same with all animals. Mm-hmm. When you're playing, and this goes back to that definition of having a stable environment, you're letting your guard down because you're focused more on fun.
Right.
Not on vigilance, not on making sure predators aren't around or feeding yourself or staying, you know, very safe. Your attention is a little distracted, so that gives room for accidents to happen.
Right.
And play can be rough sometimes. For example, that's how kittens learn how to play with each other without hurting each other. A lot of young animals don't understand the difference between actual fighting and play fighting, and so being able to play and feel those things helps them kind of understand what the difference is and what's acceptable and what's not.
Because if they don't, like with kittens, if kittens don't play fight, then they'll never learn in adult life that, oh, that's too hard.
People don't like that, or other animals don't like that.
Yeah.
And so, that's actually a common phenomenon in shelters. Kittens who grow up without siblings tend to be much harder players or more play aggressive, or have some other kind of strange traits that humans don't necessarily love. And it's just because they didn't have the opportunity to practice when they were younger. So they don't know that biting this hard hurts. Yeah.
So Danny's message to all of you is adopt 10 kittens at once.
10, minimum. Yeah. And if you adopt a single one, bite it.
talking about kittens.
Yeah.
What about interspecies play? Like, you know, all over the internet, there's videos of kittens playing with puppies, or pets are interspecies play? People playing with animals?
People playing with animals. We're a species of animal. I would hope that we all play with our pets if we have them.
Did the baboons ever play with the vervets?
So they didn't live on the exact same territory, so they didn't really have that opportunity.
That's your friend who lives too far away.
Yeah. If they had FaceTime, they would probably...
They could play games online.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they get that technology.
Don't some primates play computer games?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. But that's... See, I don't know if that... that doesn't necessarily satisfy the definition of play in that they're for
rewarded.
Them, it's immediate function.
Yeah.
It's to perform a task. But
amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, because play seems to be ubiquitous across the animal kingdom, different species will play with other species. While play is ubiquitous, it doesn't always look the same, as we talked about. So sometimes it can be misinterpreted. Sometimes one party thinks that they're playing, such as the cat chasing a lizard or a mouse for fun, to practice those hunting skills, get those zoomies out. The mouse is running for his dear life. He's not having fun. In fact, that stable environment is not there for him. Sometimes one party thinks it's play, one party doesn't. Sometimes play, play always arises spontaneously, as per the definition, but I think it can happen between species. Well, I know it can. I've seen my dog play with cats, and I've seen plenty of other species playing with species different than their own.
Because everybody wants to play.
Everyone wants to play. It's a natural thing. It feels good. It's our bodies wants to reward us for practicing how to be good members of society.
Well, you know, normally the show we review toys. Should we review this dog costume?
It can be.
I don't know. Animal toys.
She does love toys.
What kind of toys does Agnes like to play with?
Everything can be a toy. So just like your cardboard box episode, Agnes loves a cardboard box. Those are fun toys.
Well, Agnes, for being such a great guest, you get to take home any of these boxes.
Oh my gosh, best day ever. What a good prize. She really likes a dryer ball.
The wool balls.
Yeah. Loves those. Yeah. And anything ball-shaped is good. Anything that makes a squeaky sound. Sometimes my pants, you know, the side of a bed. Everything can be a toy if you...
Why is it dogs and balls? Dogs like balls so much?
Yeah.
Is it because, I don't know, what part of their nature is... Because I don't think you see wolves
retrieval.
In the wild.
Yeah, no, that's definitely like a domestication thing. I imagine it goes back to the retrieval aspect of like hunting.
Aww. Is this a sign of affection or hungry?
OCD. And affection.
Or does she think I need a shower?
Affection, mostly.
Well, thank you, Agnes.
I read that if a dog is giving you kisses and then you, like, pull away or you try and, like, be like, oh, no, they get offended.
Danny, thank you so much for being on the show and telling
thank
us all about play
so much
in primates.
Thank you so much for having me, Sam. This was so fun.
Oh, I'm glad you had fun. And
we'll
Agnes,
have to
thank
play.
You for, yeah. Agnes, thank you for being on the show. I guess, what are some of your favorite ways to play?
Ooh. What a good question. I like all kinds of play. I like drawing and playing music, like creative type things. Yeah, imaginative play.
Yeah.
So just kind of coming up with things.
Yeah.
You're growling at it.
Yeah. Is Agnes taking photo?
Yeah, you tell it.
All right, well, thank you again, Danny and Agnes, for telling us all about how animals like to play. Interviewing a human worked out a lot better than trying to interview birds and monkeys and camels. And also thank you all for listening to or watching this episode of the Untangling Toys podcast. If you're enjoying the show, the best way to support the show is by liking, commenting, rating it, wherever you get your podcasts from. If you want to know more about this show, you can follow us on all of our socials, and you can also email us with any comments or questions directly at untanglingtoys@gmail.com. I'll see you all again next week. Well, it's the wildlife. I'll see you all again next week for our next episode of Untangling Toys. This is going to be a really unique episode. We filmed it live at WonderCon, and we're going to be learning about cosplay. What is cosplay? What are cons? How do you cosplay? I don't know that much about it, but fortunately, I got a whole bunch of really experienced cosplayers to tell us all about how cosplay is play.
Yeah, I think a big part of turning dress up into cosplay is going to conventions, having cosplay friends, building a community where you can dress up together.
That'll be on next week's episode of Untangling Toys. Till then, bye.
Bye, Howler Monkey.